Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show where the music never stops and the scumbaggery gets exposed. And today we're going to be reading out some articles as well. I kind of like reading out articles on air because I get to rip them apart because they're usually full of such BS that, like two lines of an article winds up being about 15 minutes of dialogue. And, you know, who would have thunk that the mainstream media would leave out that much? Auckland Council meets to thrash out unitary plan. Okay, unitary plan, Agenda 21. Yeah. Just remember, whenever I say unitary plan, it means Agenda 21. That's basically what's going on here. There's only one mayoral candidate, who's attempting to expose the fact that it is Agenda 21, and that would be Penny Bright. I tried to give her a call this morning and get her on the show, but she's not there. The Auckland Council is sitting down for a three-day meeting this morning to thrash out the final shape of the unitary plan, Agenda 21, which will set the rules for a more intensified city over the next 30 years. Intensified. Megacity. Judge Dredd. Oh, yes, I like this plan. The height of buildings in town centres and the suburbs and the level of if intensification are among the most controversial issues to be resolved by the council, and the level if intensification. Yes, it's of intensification. New Zealand Herald, you spelling mistake, dumbasses. You know, you'd figure if you had like a couple of $1 million facilities, editors, and several other armies of douchebags who are educated in a public schooling system which dumbs them down, they'd at least be able to get the spelling correct. Oh, wait, maybe not. And, here's an interesting connection between Agenda 21. The intensification are amongst the most controversial issues to be resolved by the council and 21 local board chairs who are participating in the meeting at the Auckland Town Hall. You know, there's 21 local boards and it's Agenda 21 and the city of the Agenda 21 kind of rollout in New Zealand. This is going to be like our megacity. You know, everybody else is going to have their megacities, you know. The states are going to have a couple. Aussie are going to have a couple. And Auckland's going to be like New Zealand's megacity. And that's why they're focusing all the intensification and everything here so that they can have all the slave blocks and nobody really living anywhere else. You know, it'd be a nice mega super structure of a city to be stuck in, really. I mean, we've got nice sea views that will have, American warships in them that are pointing their Hellfire missiles at us, you know. It'll be nice. It'll be reminiscent of Syria. Councillor Anne Hartley has flagged a number of changes in the mixed housing suburban zone. The mixed housing suburban zone. You can just imagine, like, in the deep, dark future, like, Commander, we're going into the mixed housing suburban zone, which causes a chorus of complaints when it was flagged in a draft document that went out for public consultation earlier this year. You know, what's interesting is the whole thing about public consultation. It's basically just an idea for them to just go out and say, yeah, we conned the public. I mean, we consulted the public. And they really didn't do anything to oppose us, even though we got thousands of letters and such and what to the contrary. And so we're just going to go ahead with it because, you know, obviously they didn't go ahead and resist wholeheartedly, hand over fist, our evil scumbaggery agenda. That's what public consultation means. Hey, the zone was split in two. Mixed housing urban near town centres and mixed housing suburban in traditional suburban areas. Ms. Hartley was unhappy when council planners applied the same unlimited density rules to both subzones and is proposing to remove unlimited density from the suburban subzone. See, this is where we're coming in from. It's funny, I was just thinking about this yesterday. And in fact, I think Penny sent me an email about this. I'll see if I can bring that up. No, I don't really have a whole lot of things. I haven't read through it yet. But yeah, I wish I could talk to Penny about this because this is quite nasty. Because dig this. All right. The reason why you're in the suburbs is because you don't really like the whole population density kind of thing. And what this plan's doing here, according to this article, is it's saying, hey, it's going to be unlimited density in the suburbs. Unlimited density in the city. Oh, my God. It sounds like it's going to be a freaking nightmare. You know, just this endlessly expanding concrete jungle of high-rises. It'll be... It's like turning Auckland into like New York or something like that. All right, the roads can't even deal with the traffic density as we've got at the moment, and they're all public transport systems that they're going to be setting up. Oh boy, there's going to be a heck of a lot of surveillance on that stuff. There ain't going to be any freedom, no privacy, freedom of movement, you know, that kind of thing. You want to get out of the city? Hey, you're going to have to get a permit so that you don't go into any unauthorized zones. The New Zealand Institute of Architects Auckland branch and the property council are urging councillors not to backtrack on density provisions. Well, yes, because they're the private contracting scum, okay? And they get this this big, juicy packet out of all this, innit? Okay, it's going to be public-private partnerships all the way, okay? Companies working with the government, architects, builders, etc. And they're all exempt from building codes and being sued and so on and so forth if they do a crappy job. No wonder they're lock, stock and barrel behind this kind of unitary plan, which will allow them to build huge, massive slave blocks every frickin' where in the city and never held any accountability for them. And that's great. You know, it'll be just fabulous. It'll be like Joburg. NZIA Auckland, no offense to Joburg, you know. NZIA Auckland branch chairman Richard Goldie said councillors might be better to turn their attention to the issue of the quality of buildings within the two subzones. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're going to be real concerned about the quality, considering they got no liability, Quote, community concerns about density are often really concerns about building quality. Auckland has many examples of well-designed and well-built medium-density housing, but unfortunately there's also a legacy of too many poorly planned apartment complexes, he said. A mate of mine was living in an apartment complex, and there's this kind of a gap between two buildings in the distance, you know, where you can sort of see like a sliver of the sea. You know, in between this urban death landscape, and the Korean real estate agent guy goes, see, look, there's a sea view. He's just like, dude, you're gonna be freaking kidding me. And he's living in this apartment anyway, and I was in there for just like 5 minutes, and I felt like I was cramped and I needed to blow my brains out. Like going down the hallway of this like two bedroom apartment, my shoulders were touching the walls. Okay, it's that freaking cramped, and that's what we call a poorly planned slave block. You know, when it well planned slave residences. Thank you for all the peasant scum to migrate into. Oh my god, it's just terrible. Okay, I don't know about anybody else, but I really hate the whole idea of living in a slave block. Really. It's quite disgusting. For me, anyway. Maybe there's some good apartments or whatever, but, you know, proximity to neighbours, lack of privacy, you know. It's also a real pain in the ass whenever you want to let somebody up or whatever. There's all these security doors and so on and so forth. It's much better just to have a house where they come to your door, they knock on your door, you say, hi, welcome, come in, as opposed to, here's the elevator, you need a code and a flash card, and you need so on and so forth and blah, blah, blah. You need to find out where the frack this frickin' apartment is and be able to find it. You know, it's just a pain in the ass, from my perspective anyway. And, of course, that's going to be the plan for the whole city, isn't it? It's going to be terrible. I'm really looking forward to it. Property Council Chief Executive Connell Townsend said the council must continue with the current density targets in the draft unitary plan. Now the thing is, they got targets, all right? They're not taking statistics and saying, oh, we need this and such, blah, blah, blah. They've just got this Agenda 21 target. Okay, we're going to have to shuffle everybody into the slave cities to make sure that we can keep control and surveillance over them all. Okay, so that's the draft unitary plan in a nutshell there. He said councillors had the opportunity to act with courage, not only for the residents of today, but the residents of tomorrow. Yeah, it's really courageous herding people into slave blocks. The residents of tomorrow, the slave scum of tomorrow. Auckland developer Mark Todd has emailed councillors to say they have little understanding of how to motivate the private sector to build smaller, more affordable housing in places people want to live. You know, it's probably because they don't get all the extra freebies and government handouts and so on and so forth when they're not building Agenda 21 slave blocks. Mm. I love the word slave block. You know, I really do. His company, Occam Investments, has been working on proposals for three large sites of 2, 3, and 9 hectare sites for up to 1,000 quality 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes. And what a waste of time, because if the unlimited density is removed, they will be non-complying under the new plan and hence not eligible to receive preferential consent processing. Now, council consent processing, boy, do you want to talk about corruption? Oh, yeah. You just go to my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, and search Russell Malcolm. That's Russell with 2 L's and Malcolm like a first name. And his problems with the council getting consent was a real pain, okay? And they even asked him for bribes, all right? They're that freaking corrupt. And I can guarantee you, if it's happened in the Rodney Council before the Auckland Unitary Plan, I can guarantee it'll start to happen all over the city. It's probably already happening already, and there's very little chance that we'll have to stop that from happening unless they get frickin' exposed by people who keep getting fracked over by them. You know, ordinary people like you and me. What is happening here is a real tragedy. Yet again, the older, wealthy land generation is behaving in a short-sighted, selfish manner. This is a huge lost opportunity. You know, isn't it funny how business scumbags come out of the woodwork to, you know, blame everything on old people or whatever because they're not going to be able to make a huge quantity of money by putting people in slave accommodation? and, you know, call them short-sighted. Auckland Mayor Len Brown said the unitary plan was all about defining our city as a slave city. How many times have I said slave during this? Okay. Deputy Mayor Penny Hulse, who is chairing the three-day meeting of the Auckland Plan Committee, said there was a little bit of trepidation, but this is what our job is, to make hard decisions, and today is the start of that. Okay, well, luckily, Auckland can now rejoice in its slave scumbaggery. Now, I also wanted to go on to this next article here that we have. It's about Syria hits world. What is that? What is that? All right. Syria wars, fears hit world shares overnight. Syria war fears hit world shares overnight. Hang on, man, I'm not even awake yet. Sorry. Thank God it's daylight savings soon. It better be, because gosh dang it, I hate doing my show in the morning, man. No, seriously, it's much better when it's an afternoon show. That's why I've got the opportunity, if I'm staying up late working, to actually get some freaking sleep before I go on air. And I think we'll probably kind of discuss this one after the break, really, because, you know, whenever anybody talks about Syria, you know, first thing that comes to mind is a joke. Well, you can't be serious. And the second thing that comes to mind is, you know, isn't this a great proxy war to scare the living bejesus out of everybody, you know, 9/11 style? Iraq style, Afghanistan style. Oh yeah. This is gonna be nice. Let's just freak everybody out. Yeah, that'll be a good move, won't it? Yeah. We'll be able to nuke people, started war with Russia. Hey, what's not to like? World War III? Potential apocalypse? You've got to be freaking kidding me. Hence the joke, you can't be serious. This is just not funny. This is like a real scary situation. And people best wise up to this, you know. It's kind of a really dangerous move on the part of the US to threaten war with Syria that they happen to be propping up in the first place anyway, including funding the rebels who, like, work for Al-Qaeda and carry Al-Qaeda flags over capture tanks. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, you can also listen live on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you also Google Vinnie Eastwood Chat, you should show up the wee chat room there. I never look at the chat room during the live broadcast, so don't ask. It's just, you know, if you feel like chatting with other people in there or whatever, you know. It's there for you. I don't really like it because it distracts from rambling. And Syria. All right, let's get serious for a moment. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of things that people don't know about Syria, you know. It's actually quite a nice place, allegedly, before all the chemical attacks that the US probably funded and or staged with Al-Qaeda, which they owned and funded and incidentally staged. Fears of an escalating conflict in Syria rippled across financial markets on Tuesday, sinking stocks, lifting gold, and pushing the price of oil to the highest in a year and a half, a day after Secretary of State John Kerry said there was undeniable evidence of a large-scale chemical attack in Syria. Who in the... Okay, let's try to get a grip, Vinny. Who in the frack believes Senator John Skull and Bones Kerry? Are you kidding me? Tensions between the US and the regime. Oh yeah, that's right. We're gonna cut to our Middle East correspondent now. Yes, Vinny, I'm here in Syria, and the regime. Syria. Middle East, Muslim Brotherhood regime. Back to you in the studio. Thanks, Vinny, for that wonderful, informative cross-cut of propagandistic techniques. You're very welcome. Now, tensions between the US and the regime of Bashar Assad mounted. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, you know, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, said the U.S. military was ready to strike if President Barack H. O'Berry gave the order. Syria's foreign minister said his country would defend itself. You know, what you going to do? What you going to do? You can defend yourself from a pile of rubble? The United States is so evil, man. People have got nothing to do with it, apart from just freaking letting it happen. You know, think about this. How many freaking proxy wars have been fought by the United States over the last, 50, 60, 70 years? They're just fracking up the whole world. Bill Hicks was absolutely correct. Bullies of the world. Bullies of the world, man. The threats raised worries on Wall Street, and the U.S. was more likely to attack Syria That could disrupt energy trade in the region, which in turn could hurt other markets as well as the economy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 159 points, or 1.1%, to 14,791 in late afternoon trading. How in the heck is the Dow Jones Industrial Average up to 14,000 when, like, in 2008 it was, like, around 10,000 or something like that? They're just making it up. All of the stocks, all of the gold, all of the currency, it's all freaking manipulated. And what's the point of this article? Probably just to scare you. You know? Get a whole bunch of people pull their money out. Maybe they're going to try it. I don't know. Collapse the economy at some point. Everybody keeps talking about collapsing the economy, but nobody's ever done it yet. Everybody gives dates and stuff. None of them have been right yet. You know, it's just, when you think about the Third World War, what you think about is it has to be something simultaneous, okay? Like the Second World War, what was happening simultaneously along with a war? Great Depression. Okay. Massive tyrannical rise of police state and socialism in most countries, you know, something of that nature. Yeah, okay. And then, nice. And what do we got today? It's the same thing, isn't it? The Standard & Poor's 500 index lost 23 points, or 1.4%, to 1,634, and the NASDAQ composite. You know what? What does this matter? Have you noticed? You sit there and you watch all these statistics on the news, and they're telling you how much the stock market has fallen by how many points and so on and so forth. Does anybody actually understand what one or two of those points means? No, I thought not. And all of these news outlets, they report it like they know what they're talking about. I guarantee you, you start asking any of these douchebag reporters, what is two or three points on the NASDAQ Industrial Index mean going down? And they're like, it's bad for the economy. So you don't actually really know. You're just acting under the assumption that what they're telling you, first of all, that the statistics are actually the truth. That the stock market itself isn't a complete frickin' lie and a scam bucket of monkeys full of thieves and suits sitting there trading away everybody else's futures. That's why they call it futures trading. Futures commodity. And just making stuff up and taking control of the entirety of the economy while fear-mongering everybody with little things like, there's a couple of points down. You know, it's like Black Hawk down, but except there's a couple of points instead. I don't get it. The law of unintended consequences, and I call them unintended consequences sometimes because it's like there's many layers of consequences, like an onion. And the history of previous military interventions in the region is not a recipe for political and economic stability, said Neil McKinnon, global macro strategist at VTB Capital. VTB Capital sounds like some kind of a capitalist venereal disease. The sell-off in U.S. stocks was broad. All 10 industry sectors in the S&P 500 index were in the red. That's probably because they're all run by communists. And only 21 of the 500 stocks in the index rose. Utilities and other high dividend paying stocks escaped the selling. And isn't that interesting? Because I guess people know that utilities are going to be very valuable if there's some kind of a war. Why do you think armies kind of attack utilities, infrastructure, and things of that nature when they go into countries? You know, they blew up water plants in Iraq. They blew up power plants. They blew up freaking everything, man. Messed up their roads, messed up their bridges, so on and so forth. If you cripple a nation's infrastructure, you got them. It fracks. They can't fight back. They can't even boil water to throw on your face. That's the sad reality of it. And I think that's why the New World Order wants to take control of all infrastructure globally. Because if they ever needed to, if they ever really needed to, like fight the local population who are resisting being taken over by a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery, you just shut your power off, mate. And you're fracked. You know? Maybe. I don't know. It's just a little theory of mine. The impact wasn't just in stocks. Gold prices advanced and government bond prices jumped because traders see those investments holding their value better in times of uncertainty. Oil surged $3.03 or 2.9% to $108.94, a level last reached in May 2011. Do you remember when it was like $140 a barrel and people were thinking, oh my God, it's peak oil, it's peak oil? Who the frack still believes in peak oil? Really? Really? I mean, come on. Oil prices go up to $140 a barrel, and then they go back down to like $60 over 6 months. And apparently, oh, the oil's running out. It's that much harder to get home. No, it's an infinite freaking resource. For some reason, it gets produced in the middle of the earth and starts spurting up at all of these different spots around the skin. It's kind of like, like for example, if you talk to a teenager, and you ask the teenagers, do you think your pimples are an infinite resource? And you'll be like, absolutely, yeah, because pimple nizzle keeps getting produced and it keeps popping out of my skin. That's not entirely dissimilar from the way oil is produced, I reckon. Anyway, the Russians figured it out. You know, the Russians have figured out a lot of stuff. You know, they figured out that diamonds are practically worthless. You can just make them in a lab just as hardcore, and just as beautiful for like nothing. Oil is infinite. It reproduces itself. It keeps coming out of the ground. There's no end to it. There's oceans of the stuff under the crust of the earth. They drilled down 60,000 feet. 60,000 feet! Normal drilling platforms do like 10,000 feet before they strike a little bit of oil pockets. These guys drilled down to way, 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 way deeper. Like and there's like these caverns. You know, like straight out of Lord of the Rings, filled with just trillions upon trillions of barrels of oil. Oil that you see in every freaking direction. It's out of control amounts of oil. And they say that there's peak oil so that they can trick people with artificial scarcity to make them think that there's actually a problem here. To make them think that oil's actually the problem. Actually, control of the oil by a bunch of cartel scumbags like US Standard Oil and the Dutch Royal Shells and the BHP, which is incidentally owned by the Royals as well. That's the real problem with oil, is it's controlled by scumbags. And on top of that, the engines and things of that nature that we've got in our cars wind up wasting about 90% of the oil in the petrol, gasoline, whatever. Okay, you know the reason why you got exhaust? All right, it's because it's unburned hydrocarbons, yo. When your fuel gets squirted into your engine, it's got these massive droplet sizes, and it can't burn it all up. So about 90 to 98% of it or whatever just passes through as a vapor, gases out through the exhaust pipe. There's many things that have been done over time in order to improve that level of efficiency, okay? The Pogue carburetor, for example, the very first carburetor that was ever made was like used a wick, okay, in order to light the fuel. And this guy, Cameron Pogue, I believe it was, prior to World War II, created a carburetor that got 200 miles a gallon. All right? That's prior to World War II. Okay? They were putting fuel injector engines, water injection engines, sorry, in Spitfires. Why do you think the Spitfires were so capable and the P-51s? Were taking out Germans like no tomorrow's because when they hit a special switch, it squirted water into the fuel canisters, and the extra power that you can get from water in terms of acceleration is quite remarkable. They were capable of winning the Battle of Britain on that Shiite Muslim. There's a lot of stuff that people don't know, and all this technology has been suppressed. And now you've got to drive around in a car that you think is, it's fuel efficient because it's a hybrid car or whatever. It's made with lithium that they kill entire massive tracts of land with in order to extract out of it. And then when you're sitting there, you're sitting on a whole bunch of incredibly highly charged electronic devices, essentially, that literally cook you while you drive and give you freaking cancer. And then tell you it's all because of peak oil, because of the technology that we suppressed that got you near 100% fuel efficiency, which means that you'd be paying like, a couple of cents a gallon kind of thing, if everything was realistically priced. That's how fracked the situation is. And this whole, you know, war with Syria, war in Iraq, war in the Middle East, it ain't necessarily about oil. It's about geopolitical control. Zbigniew Brzezinski has said this for quite some time. I believe he mentioned it in his book, The Grand Chessboard, that indeed the reason why they wanted to invade all of these countries is to drive a wedge in between China and Russia and the US. So the US controls the Middle East, all right? Because that's where a lot of the oil production is, admittedly. And, I find it really strange as well that people don't notice this. They don't notice that it's not actually about oil, per se, in the Middle East. It's about geopolitical control. They need all their bases and everything there so that they can cut off the Russians from reinforcements. They can cut off the Chinese. All right? The Russians and Chinese have got people all over the world and that kind of thing. And if you have to do a hop, skip, and a jump in between massive controlled territories of the United States with your Patriot missiles and so on and so forth, you're going to lose a lot of troops in transit. That's why they were doing a whole bunch of, teleportation experiments, allegedly, back in the 70s and 80s, is because they wanted to get troops to particular locations without losing about 50% of them, as was the case in World War II. About half of the troops that left for the battlefield never made it. And this is what we've got here. We've got a proxy war about to be started up for no good reason, just to prop up geopolitical regimes and help the establishment of the New World Order. And that's basically all you really got to worry about. You know, it's just World War III. It's just the end of the world. It's just nuclear holocaust. It'll be all good. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm not going to take it too seriously. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you go anywhere.
The conditions which framed and taught us our status have gone with us.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. You know, about to say something there. We'll reconsider. Government opens forest to prospectors. You know, if only I had a banjo. And we know. Oh, God. The Nick Smith. Jeepers creepers. God, he looks horrific. Oh. He's our environment sinister, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. You know. You know, that kind of person who goes around and says, I'm all for protecting the environment and the government role. And then as a result, what he does is he sells the entire country out to oil companies, coal companies, gold mining companies, so on and so forth. X amount of scumbaggery, New World Order affiliated companies. And then just says, you know, I'm doing it for the environment. Pushing climate change like there's no tomorrow. You know, corporate welfare. Yeah, that's gonna save the environment. Brilliant. Freaking brilliant. The government has opened up much of the volcanic plateau for gold and silver prospecting. Oh, yeah, boy, we're going to get down in there some prospecting. I don't know what it is. Has the image of a prospector not really changed since like the 1800s or something like that? Like you envisage this kind of bearded, toothless, shabby hat wearing, shotgun toting, panhandling, sort of a scruffy, rugged individualist, busy trying to eke out a living through scratching through rocks. That's kind of what prospecting, you know, the image that conjures up when I think about it. I just imagine Nick Smith in that get-up. With filthy overalls and all. Brilliant. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment's Petroleum and Minerals Department. That's a hell of a lot. What the hell is the acronym for that? The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment's Petroleum and Minerals. Okay, well, yeah, let me just get like a piece of paper up here. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, Petroleum and Minerals Department. So it's the Mobia Epamd. The Mobia Epamd. Oh, yeah, that's good. So the Mobia Epamd is seeking tenders for exploration permit for more than 8,000 square kilometres of the central volcanic zone across the Bay of Plenty and Waikato. Oh, no. This can't be good. The area is known to contain epithermal-style gold and silver deposits in both extinct and active geothermal fields. According to David Binney, General Manager of New Zealand Petroleum and Minerals. Although the area tagged for exploration includes conservation land, Mr. Binney said any Schedule 4 areas were excluded. But the Green Party pointed out the area included the Puriroa Forest Park west of Lake Taupo, which does not have Schedule 4 protection. And you know what will be funny? The great thing about the government is that they could just change their own laws when they don't like following them. So they'll just change whatever Schedule 4 land into like Schedule 3 or Schedule 5 or whatever. What does even Schedule 4 mean? Oh, well, it means like a protected, you know, site of national significance or something of that nature. And there's nothing to stop them from just rushing something through urgently, you know. Oh, it's urgent. We need to sign this permit for these people to frack, literally. Frack the land and contaminate everybody's water supply. That's really urgent. We need to pass that through right now. Mm. And let's get it done. And they'll do it, you know. So they don't give a frack, ironically. The government should not be tendering for mineral exploration permits in this precious place, Green Party mining spokeswoman Catherine Delahunty said. I like Catherine. She's a nice lady. The Puriroa Forest is some of the best lowland forest remaining of the North Island. The majority of the ancient totara trees remaining in New Zealand are found in Puriroa. And, you know, it's funny. New Zealand wilderness is kind of like disappearing, man. Like, honestly. I remember watching our country calendar the other night and these old farmers, you know, the guy's like, I don't know, 90, 95 odd, and he's still getting himself around, still walking around. I mean, he's got these big chunks of land down his farm that he commanded all the next generations of farmers not to slash and burn, to let it go back to nature. And, you know, sure enough, all the birds that had previously just decided to bugger off have come back, you know. Isn't that nice? We actually got some beautiful, pristine bushland that's maintained by a New Zealand farmer. Just so that the birds can have somewhere to frickin' live and breed safely and securely of his own free will, using his own land, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's a better idea. Yeah, just give it to the government, because the government has contaminated every single river and lake that has been put under its care, whereas certain Māori trusts who've been taking care of rivers and lakes in this country since, you know, time verge immemorial, have gotten massive success in taking care of these areas because they actually care. Government doesn't care. What about the land? Some certain people care about the land. Government doesn't. They open it up for frickin' mining. That's their idea of caring about the land. How can we exploit that Shiite Muslim? Conservation Minister Nick Smith said the bid process was at a very preliminary stage. Oh, you know, here's the thing. For frack's sake. Oh, you don't need to worry about us killing you because we're just at the preliminary stages. You know, that's what it kind of sounds like to me. You don't need to worry about us enslaving you because we're only just getting started. Well, in fact, you know, it comes back on a different thing entirely, you know. Maybe you're just getting started, so we should start to be really worried. Really worried. Because you're a dangerous person, aren't you, Mr. Smith? Oh, yeah. And it was far too early to speculate on whether any mining proposals, either open cast or underground, will eventuate. Well, isn't that nice? You know, oh, you're just looking into things, right? And we should only really worry about it once you've already given them permission and once they've invested goodness knows how many freaking millions of dollars in order to extract minerals out of, like, you know, ancient forests and things of that nature and do, like, open cast mining or whatever, you know. And maybe we shouldn't even be looking up off of our morning newspapers and just going, huh, what? What did you? No, go back to sleep. Have another coffee, bro. You won't worry. Maybe you just have your Egg Benedict. You'll be fine, you know. Goes here to the wee little cafe. Should be sweet as. This is about finding out what resources we have, and then as a country, we can make better informed decisions about the trade-offs between conservation values and jobs from minerals development. Tenderers need to be aware that just because there may be minerals in an area like Porirua Forest does not mean they will get access to them to mine. Exploration permits are valid for 5 years, but may be extended for up to 10 years, and the permit does not give the holder automatic access to explore for minerals. Okay, that's nice. And we got another article up here. Because I remember having a wee few laughs at John Key's daughter yesterday on the radio, on the Man Talk Project, and that was good. That was good. You know, a lot of people gave me grief about that. It's like, why are you, you know, you're criticizing women and blah, blah, blah. It's a woman's right to choose. Nudity's fine. It's like, look, bro, it's the daughter of a statesman, okay? And she's posing nude with a cherry in her mouth and a gun to her head with the word pop in her red panties. Can't I have a permission to laugh at the guy whose daughter it is? You know, laugh at his public embarrassment? He is, after all, destroying the frickin' country and selling us out to the New World Order. Can't I just have that one little reprieve, you know? Because there's not a single bit of his a bit of his agenda that anybody's defeated thus far, you know? There was a while ago that there was these massive mining protests, and thanks to Greenpeace, you know, I don't have a hell of a lot to be thankful to Greenpeace for, but thanks to Greenpeace, they actually did something and got off their asses and organised a protest of epic proportions, largest protest I've ever seen, maybe even the largest in the country's history. 50,000 people marching down Queen Street for the anti-mining protest, of which there was only one arrest, and only one cameraman caught that arrest on camera. You guessed it, it was me. And you can have a look at all those videos there and everything, but guess what happens? As with the previous article, it just gives you mining permits anyway. Don't freaking care. I mean, this is how they operate, okay? They push the envelope, and if you push it back, then they'll just push it again somewhere down the track once everybody's freaking forgotten about it. And it doesn't take that long for people to forget about things nowadays because it's about like a 30-second attention span thanks to mainstream media. I mean, am I wrong in saying that people need to be vigilant all the time of government scumbaggery? I mean, is this the only reason why we're actually living in a country that hasn't fallen already? It's because there are people out there who are always watching, always thinking, always scheming of how to resist the government. And it's many, many scumbaggery agendas. I mean, you can't even count them on your fingers and frickin' toes how much scumbaggery is out there. It's unfreaking believable. There's more scumbaggery all day than anybody could ever conceive of, you know? And it just keeps getting more. It's like fractal scumbaggery. You know, for each bit of scumbaggery that you look into, it's like, oh my God, there's all new whole worlds of scumbaggery that I was never even involved in. I never even knew there was this much scumbaggery in existence. And look, there's yet more to come. Yeah, yeah, fractal scumbaggery. You gotta love it. It's infinite, isn't it? It's frickin' infinite. And I think that people had best get wise to the infinite scumbaggery complex that we've got in this country, and every other, for that matter. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, 218-339-8525. We're taking your calls after the break. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Really want people to be interested in listening to this radio broadcast and calling in on 218-339-8525. But in lieu of people being interested and or calling in, I have articles to read. All right. Here's one for you. Key loses plot in Labour poking fun. Albeit briefly, John Key lost the plot in Parliament yesterday. The Prime Minister could not remember the question Labour's David Cunliffe had asked him moments earlier when Key recalled the relevant portfolio something to do with Labour. He started talking about completely different legislation to that which Cunliffe had referred. And the Prime Minister has not lost his marbles. He was, in his words, having just too much fun at Labour's expense to worry about the subject matter of the questions. Now, if you're in a schoolyard, you know, this is basically the kind of guy that our Prime Minister is. Oh, I'm just having too much. Having too much fun. Abusing my political colleagues in order to even keep up with the subject matter. I don't know. I got detention for doing things like that when I was in high school. I don't know. Maybe the Prime Minister should get detention too, like in Guantanamo Bay. Two of the contenders, Cunliffe and Grant Robertson, took the only realistic option. Targeting Key. Shane Jones, Labour's spokesman on regional development, chose Stephen Joyce, whose responsibilities include promoting economic growth in the regions. With his mind loaded with jokes, Key had one objective: to show who is the boss, regardless of who becomes Labour's next leader. Robertson focused on National's unemployment record. Key's best rejoinder came when contestant number one, as Key labelled him, asked Key how many New Zealanders were out of work. Key replied by saying the labour market was very fluid. That sounds like a great politician answer, don't you think? Last week, one person lost his job. Now there are three people looking for it, he said to hoots of laughter from colleagues. Yeah, three people applying for one job. That's real hilarious, isn't it, Mr. John Key, in your million-dollar mansion in Parnell there, which I've seen, and we'll be visiting soon to Bullhorn when the cops aren't around to stop me. With a couple of other activists who you've really fracked over. You know, you freaking scumbag. I really hate these people. You know? They just got no respect for anybody. They don't care. They're so far removed from the reality on the street of this country that it's beyond a joke. Okay, it's not funny, Mr. Key. You're not funny. You're just a douche. When Robertson finished, National MPs held up scorecards giving him marks of one or two. Presumably out of 10. Speaker David Carter quickly put a stop to it, but this was never going to be one of Parliament's more edifying afternoons. Indeed, Cunliffe's turn was greeted by National MPs waving their arms triumphantly above their heads in the same fashion as the Newland MP after confirming he was joining the race to be leader. Now, appeal to ridicule. This is a logical fallacy, isn't it? And have you noticed how the National Party acts like a whole bunch of schoolchildren? No, I mean, really. They've been headed up by Bully Key and Bully Bennett and a whole bunch of other, you know, just they all look like psychopaths to me. Honestly, they're douchebags. I once went to a Young Nats meeting that was even hosted by one of my cousins, John Eastwood, same namesake as my father. And they were just like, oh my God. It's like, you know, when you walk into a room and you feel really uncomfortable because people have made you feel really uncomfortable because they're just wrong. You know, like they're wrong in the head. They're wrong in so many freaking ways that your body actually just reacts and goes, oh, these people make me feel sick. And we were having conversations and they just kept walking away from me. And I was like, well, hold on a second. Am I not welcome here? And, my cousin tells me, this is kind of like a private thing and blah, 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 blah. You know, we don't really want the kind of people who are here shouting from the rafters. Shouting from the rafters? I was just here having a perfectly reasonable conversation, wasn't doing anything nasty or offensive or anything like that. You're all just a bunch of scum, aren't you? Really? That's what they all are. All of these young gnats, they're scum. They're silver spoon in the mouth. I worked hard to get where I am. Yeah, after huge quantities of support from your wealthy ass parents who actually worked hard to what they have. You're given everything that you got. They think because they've got everything that they can look down on everybody else and treat them all like trash and be bullies, you know, and exclude anybody they don't want. Never listen to anything that's different to what they think. And sure enough, they make great politicians. Isn't that what you need in a politician? Somebody who doesn't listen to anybody? Somebody who just, you know, ignores different opinions that matter? By this stage, Key was unstoppable. When Cunliffe referred to Nationals legislation, which will make it harder for trade unions to negotiate collective contracts, Key turned the question back to Cunliffe by noting the unions had a big say in who would become Labor's next leader. Neither Robertson nor Cunliffe landed a hit on Key, but they held their ground. And that's why we call him Teflon John, all right? Nothing gets through. This guy's so freaking slick. He's a smiling assassin. You know how he got the name Smiling Assassin? I spoke to a girl one time at a party. Her father worked with John Key in Wall Street. John Key fired 200 people in a day, okay? 200 people, one after the other, coming out of John Key's office, bawling their eyes out, have their livelihoods destroyed, don't know how they're going to support their families, no golden handshake, no golden parachute, no nothing, they're all gone. And John Key walks out, smiling from ear to ear, because that's how he gets you. Gives you a big old grin, and then slips the knife in between your ribcage. That's what he's doing. Jones was a disappointment. He aimed some tame questions at Joyce, but gets a chance to redeem himself this afternoon when he and his fellow quote-unquote contestants can put another question to a minister. This time, Jones must choose Key for his bid for his party's top job to remain credible. I really don't care about a lot of the news stories that get covered. It's just kind of like childish fun poking. really, at the end of the day. Speaking of childish fun poking, intelligence service on hunt for new director. And here's the old spokesperson for the intelligentsia in New Zealand. Incidentally, it's practically CIA funded. Intelligence service on hunt for new director. The spy agency charged with protecting New Zealand from, quote, violent extremism and espionage. Well, hold on a second. Now, don't you find it ironic that a government department, wait, maybe that was a Freudian slip there, charged with protecting the country from violent extremism and espionage are the ones who condone most of the violence and run most of the espionage? Who'd be better? I mean, Have I gotten wires crossed here? Am I wrong? No, I don't freaking think so. The New Zealand Security Intelligence Service, SIS, has advertised for a new director, highlighting the need to, quote, build trust in the intelligence and security sector. Ah!
God. Oh my God.
He wasn't joking. He actually wants to build trust in the intelligence and security sector.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. Oh my God, that's funny. Oh God. Okay, I'm going to count down just a minute.
Okay, let's try to get a grip. The service's role is to investigate threats to New Zealand and give them a job. Protect the country from foreign spies and to give them passports, especially if they're Israeli. And to spy on other countries while they spy on us and then share information with them because it's illegal to spy on your own citizens. But not anymore under the GCSB bill, of course. It has a more feet-on-the-ground approach to intelligence than the Government Communications Security Bureau, the GCSB, which I just alluded to, which just had electronic surveillance powers extended to allow it to spy on New Zealanders. Okay, so at the same time that they give one government department the ability to spy on everybody and everybody's emails, they're also looking for a new director of the hands-on-the-ground kind of people who actually go in and order wax on people and so on and so forth, because they need people to be able to trust the intelligence and security sector. I smell a rat. A big, scary rat. The Bureau was recently embarrassed when caught illegally spying on internet tycoon Kim.com for the police. And 88 others, mind you, New Zealand Herald, you censoring, omission-ridden frickin' filth. The NZSIS position, it's the State Intelligence Services, it kind of like our, if the GCSB is the NSA of New Zealand, and the SIS is probably the CIA. And the difference between the NSA and the CIA is the NSA have all the great toys and goodies and so on and so forth, but the CIA are the ones who commit all the crimes, set up all the shell corporations, import all the drugs and so on and so forth. You know, they're the boots on the ground kind of guys. And the NSA just, you know, kind of sit back, you know. That's why in Mexico they call them the NSA. The NZSIS position description revealed that the ripples of the illegal spying affair continue, with the incoming director told to make sure the issues raised in the GCSB did not reflect problems against the intelligence sector. Okay, so dig this. We're afraid that it might appear that we're a bunch of corrupt scum, so what we're going to do is just change the corrupt scumbag who's actually leading the sector in order to convince everybody that, oh, we've got different corrupt scum and now it's no longer corrupt scum. The job ad also forecast more cooperation with the GCSB. So at the same time, they vacate a position and they try to tell the person what we're trying to do is distance ourselves from the GCSB and their illegal activities, which we just made legal, in order to give the intelligence and security sector more credibility and stuff like that. We want to distance ourselves from that while working closely together with them. For frack's sake! Is it blatant? It's just so in your face now, isn't it? It really is. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? The position comes vacant with the retirement of Dr. Warren Tuckett, a constant figure in intelligence and security services over the past 30 years. Man, I'd love to get him on the show and sign a full confession, you know, figure out what the frack has been going on in this country for the last 30 years. Because 30 years is basically like the last 30 years have been the worst 30 years in this nation's history. Incidentally, it's the only 30 years that I've been alive in this nation's history. A spokesman for Prime Minister John Key paid tribute to Dr. Tucker, saying, quote, he has made a significant contribution to the country's security and intelligence sector, for what the Prime Minister is very grateful. The last vacancy in the security services was the GCSB director's job, filled by current director Ian Fletcher in February 2012. So they just, you know, appointed a new person. And guess who appointed him? You get it? The John Key Prime Minister. The appointment of Mr. Fletcher caused scandal when it emerged he was known to the Prime Minister from school. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. Oh. Oh, crap. This country is so freaking corrupt, man. Like, honestly, people think that New Zealand is like land of milk and honey, like it ain't corrupt, like it ain't full of evil mafioso pieces of trash like walking around who own the courts, own the police, own the government, own all the companies and everything that run this place. Holy cow, it is that so much. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, this country is so fracked. I just don't see anybody doing anything about it. You know, well, actually, I do see people doing stuff about it all the time. But they're writing letters. They're staging little protests. And they're not making YouTube videos. They're not going after the public. It's just we're in deep freaking trouble here. And all of the previous methodologies that we're trying to work just ain't working. Okay. All the legal channels and everything that we've been given to fight against scumbaggery in this country are basically useless, you know? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, when they pass a piece of draconian legislation, they ask for the public to write submissions. Yes, submit to us. And then people submit, and then they wonder why the legislation didn't get changed at all and why they just rode roughshod over them. Because all you did was submit to them, bro. What do you think the word submission means? Why do you think they ask for your submission before they pass bills? I mean, come on. It's right there in front of your face. They don't care. Just freaking evil scumbags is what they are. It's just, oh, my God. And the fact that Fletcher, good dude, is like one of John Key's mates from freaking school, and then he appoints him to be head of the GCSB like a year before they pass this GCSB bill to spy on all New Zealanders. I mean, it's just the corruption could not be clearer. It emerged Mr. Key had reached out to Mr. Fletcher to ask him to interview for the position after being unable to fill the role. It's like you come across a whole bunch of people. Hey, Mr. Key, how's it going? Hey, mate, I need you to be the head of a draconian spy organization that has offices from the NSA in its building. And you go, like, whoa, why do you want me to do that? Oh, just to spy on New Zealanders, anybody that threatens our agenda kind of thing, so we can, you know, target them, red flag them for analysis and eliminate them if absolutely necessary. You know, just take them out of the game, especially if my corporate buddies in Hollywood tell me to do so. In the case of Kim.com, a whole bunch of people said, "Nah, bro, I don't really want to take the heat for that kind of thing." He's like, "Okay, I'll just ask one of my old schoolmates." Hey, Mr. Fletcher. He's like, "Yeah, bro, I've got a favour to ask you." You know, all too happy to oblige. Mr. Fletcher's appointment was seen as a shift to the future from the GCSB's military-bound, bunkered roots. Yep. Well, I'm sure all of us are going to be military-bound and quite rooted soon, aren't we, Mr. Key? Thank you very much. We'll be right back after the break. 218-339-8525. Call in if you can. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, and all the archives can be accessed at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you go to the homepage there, you should be able to find the last 2 days of archives, as well as the links to the full pages of archives for every single show we have done so far this year. And if you want to donate or make a subscription for a couple of dollars a month through PayPal or the bank account or whatever you really want to, please do so, because this show is entirely listener supported. There is no possibility any massive evil corporation would ever fund something like this. Okay, we're trying to have fun, we're trying to give people information, and we're trying to have a few laughs amidst all the scumbaggery. Who'd want to support that? The listeners. That's who. That's right. That's you. So go to TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, click donate, or subscribe for just a few dollars a month, just so I've got that regular support. Because that way I don't have to worry about where my next meal's coming from, for one. The bank account's being dry this particular week. It's a real frustrating one, you know. I need some new shoes. I need some new pants. It's just, you know, wear and tear. If you're going out to protest every single week like I am and covering it like nobody else does and leading them and la-da-la-da-la-da-la, you know, I'm pretty integral. Maybe I'm upping my own importance, self-importance here, but at the end of the day, nobody else does what I do in this country, and it's sorely, sorely needed. And there's just no alternative. It's unfortunate. I am the alternative alternative. It's sad, isn't it? Speaking of alternative alternatives, let's talk about Peter Dunn. You ever heard of this guy? He's such a douche. I've ambushed this guy once before, actually. Spy law MP's target of hacktivist group. Shadowy band that closed GCSB website says it will expose the secrets of politician who passed controversial legislation. See, I didn't know that a hacktivist closed the GCSB website. Like, Dick, that's so funny. That is so funny. Like John Key comes up on the on the TV and says, oh, well, it's like a virus protector. Yeah, we're going to protect everybody from hackers and such and blah, blah, blah. You can't even protect your fracking selves. Serves you right. Oh, my God. And just like everything John Key says, he's a liar. He's a freaking liar. Okay, I can't make it any clearer than that. How many times does somebody have to lie to you before you realize that they're a liar and you can't trust anything that they say? How many times do they have to lie to you once? Do they have to lie to you twice, thrice, or 7,000 times like John Key has before you start thinking, you know what, maybe this guy is a liar. Mr. Dunn said it was likely hacking and release of private information would lead to calls for the government to get tougher on security. So the reason why you're getting all of this stuff is because you tried to get tougher on security in a draconian way, and now when it's back on you, you're like, oh, well, we need to get even tougher in an even more draconian way, which will probably cause even more hacking and stuff like that. How about you just learn to freaking care about people a little bit and start asking them questions instead of secretly surveilling their Shiite Muslim? Politicians who were instrumental in the passing of the controversial GCSB law are being treated by an international hacker group. Treated by an international hacker group, you know, like salmon and sandwiches and so on, so forth, which wants to dump their secrets online. Oh, I can't wait for that. The anonymous group of hacktivists say they will give the politicians who voted the bill in the chance to prove they truly have nothing to hide and nothing to fear. In an interview with the Herald, carried out through encrypted chat services, an anonymous member named Prime Minister John Key, his deputy Bill English, and Attorney General Chris Finlayson as top of the hit list. United Future leader Peter Dunn and ACT leader John Banks were also named. Quote, releasing such personal information sends a message that they're not very hard to find. They aren't the only ones who can gather intelligence. The anonymous group has already conducted a successful strike against the government, knocking the GCSB website offline on Friday. The person speaking to the Herald claimed to be a New Zealander and to have coordinated the attack. The Herald contacted the person through two YouTube videos which threatened action. The YouTube account was linked to Twitter messages sent to the MPs being targeted. Internationally, the anonymous group has caused havoc for corporations, governments, and other organizations with hack attacks and operations designed to overwhelm and shut down computer systems. They have been called both cyber terrorists and freedom fighters, attracting international law enforcement action and arrests by the FBI. The group maintains it can continue in spite of the arrest, using the slogan, "We are Legion," and saying it has no central body. Which, of course, makes it prone to infiltration by intelligence agencies and also makes it really good because whenever they attack anybody, in officialdom, officialdom can use those attacks as a great excuse to basically restrict and destroy people's access to the internet again. You know, counterintelligence is a complicated business. All you got to do is claim that you're working for the side that you're not really working for, and then do things which benefit the other side that you claim that you're attacking. Boom. Nice one. Whether or not Anonymous is actually a real group of people, and, you know, I'm of many minds about this. I don't know. Is Anonymous some kind of a psyop to be used by government and all other scumbaggery agencies in order to demonize anybody who uses the internet for quote-unquote nefarious purposes, i.e. freedom purposes? Maybe. Haven't seen the documents to prove it. Is this group freaking easy to infiltrate because all you have to do is have a bloody ISP blocker and claim you're anonymous? Yeah, that's real easy to infiltrate. So any government agent could easily get in there, and because there's no central leadership or anything like that, if Anonymous comes out and attacks somebody, who's there to say, hey, look, this isn't an official Anonymous attack? Then how would you know? Because there's no official leadership, is there? The Anonymous member said the denial of service attack on Friday, which took down the GCSB website, was a distraction for an attack which secured secret data. The action has been driven by the passing of the new GCSB law. Quote, it's an unadulterated violation of human rights, constitutionally illegal, and an invasion of the people's privacy. John Key is weak for giving it to the United, or giving in, sorry, to the United States. John Key was sent here by the United States. And here's the thing. I also get really fracked off when people, and if people do this all the time in New Zealand, Americans listening, they hate you. All right? They hate you, hate you, hate you. They say, Americans do this, Americans do that, Americans are stupid, Americans blah, 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 blah. They don't even know what it is to be American. They don't even know what freedom or liberty is. They know nothing about the good, decent, honest, hardworking, truther Americans out there who know about all of this stuff, who aren't freaking retarded, who don't shovel down McDonald's like there's no freaking tomorrow, okay? And see, this is the problem. America is being destroyed by design. All the people are now seen by the rest of the world as just these fat, lazy, stupid slobs. Who are just incapable of doing anything, let alone tie their own shoelaces, let alone run foreign policy. And then the other symbol of America that people are very well familiar with is the corporations. You know, oh, corporate big business and so on and so forth. And they blame you, the American people, for all of this. I guess you are to blame to an extent, but that's not a representation of all the people in America. And my mate was even telling me this the other day, and I said, bro, watch this documentary. And we're sitting there, we're watching a documentary, and we hear all this incredible dialogue, like, wow, that's amazing, wow, that's amazing, that's incredible, that's really exposing the agenda, and these people are really intelligent, these people are qualified, these people are actually care about their country, these people are patriotic. And I go, those are the real Americans, bro. All the other ones that you're talking about, all these vacuous valley girl trash that couldn't do a financial calculation, past balancing their own frickin' checkbook, they're not real Americans. They're just slaves that the New World Order has created via their propaganda, via their posterity, and via their scumbaggery. Okay? They're not real Americans. Sure, they were born in America, but that doesn't make them real Americans. You know what I'm saying? You know what the difference is? Real American actually cares about their country to the point where they would really consider fighting and dying for it. Really consider it. And many have already done already. But for the right reasons. Not to attack Iraqis or any other denomination that the government tells you to attack, but to in fact defend actual freedom, defend actual liberty, to indeed be a nice person, offer food to your guests in your house, so to speak. You know, I just really feel sad that a lot of New Zealanders think this way about my American brethren. It's pretty sad, man. It's actually quite disgusting, really. Because it's all pitting us all against each other. You know, we're really not against each other. You know what we're all really against at the end of the day? Groups like the New World Order, the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Club of Rome, all these big, massive, evil climate change legislation, government surveillance, things of this nature, which we all have an interest in resisting and destroying because it's just too dangerous to just let them go free, isn't it? These people will kill all of us eventually if they're given half the chance. You know, frack, we're all being killed already. Thank you, Fukushima. Involvement in the attack risked jail, and when told this, the person said, "You sign up to the army, you get deployed in Afghanistan, there is always a risk of getting killed, but it's a risk they are willing to take for their country." A GCSB spokesman confirmed the attack, saying no moves were underway to find the culprit and there was no record of data being taken. Oh. Just, that's such BS. I mean, come on. Government department gets hacked and you're not even trying to find the guy who did it and you deny that there's any evidence taken. Lying scumbag. I guess their spokesperson is really good at PR. Mr. Key had no comment. However, Mr. Dunn said it was likely hacking and release of private information would lead to calls for the government to get tougher on security. Yeah, by all the slave scum New Zealanders who just go, "Oh, well, I trust John Key. I trust the government." We're in for another election cycle next year. I don't know about you, but I'm so tired. I'm so tired of elections. The frack is the point? You know, I mean, I know that the Nats, as I call them, are going to win. I know this. How do I know this? It's just call it intuition. Okay? No matter what mud you throw at this John Key guy, nothing sticks to him. Nothing. He can take away your rights to privacy, people still vote for him. He can open up the parks for mining, people still vote for him. He can sell out the country to international movie interests, people still vote for him. He can authorize illegal spying on prominent New Zealand businessmen, people still vote for him. He can cut funding to public schools and give them to private schools, people still vote for him. He can increase unemployment, people still vote for him. He can decrease support for people on the benefits or whatever. People still vote for him. He can make international treaties and sign us up to NATO without anybody even knowing about it, and people still vote for him. He can put in more tax increases than any other prime minister in frickin' history while claiming while he's coming in that he's there to eliminate taxes. People still vote for him. You can't make a fracking thing stick to this guy. I really am quite... What's the word? I don't think it's disillusioned. Because I wasn't operating under any illusion that this mother fracker was telling anything akin to the truth from day one. But maybe it's like... when you've been fighting for so long, exposing X amount of scumbaggery for such a period of time, that even after two election cycles, you've been yelling and screaming at the top of your voice, still nobody listens. You get really disheartened. Black sunrise, black we'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Call-in lines are open, 218-339-8525. I'll take callers if more than a couple call in. But other than that, we have an article to finish reading. It's just one more line. Asked if he had information he'd rather keep hidden. This is talking about Peter Dunn, by the way, regarding the GCSB and the hackers trying to put out sensitive information of scumbags who passed this freaking iniquitous bill. He said, "I'm not sure. There may be things, but I'm not sure where they are located." Yeah, okay, so you don't know where your own dirty laundry is located, Mr. Dunn. Okay, I'll tell you what. It's located in your freaking coffers. The amount of money that you have taken from alcohol and tobacco lobbyists over the years in order to bind successive governments into never talking about the legalization of cannabis is, I think, a good place to start. You corrupt, payoff-taking crapper. I wish I could swear on this broadcast. Honestly, I really don't like that guy. All right? It's nothing personal. He's just evil. You know? Maybe that is personal. Frack it. I don't like him. All right. Cunliffe, job ready, and Labour's obvious choice. I happen to agree with that. I've spoken to Cunliffe outside a little thingy. David Cunliffe, by the way, the head of the Labour Party here in New Zealand, right? And he's the MP for Newlyn, and that's like just down the road from me or whatever. And he's managed to get in this new rail station and bus depot and so on and so forth. The whole place has got these massive new developments, new shopping mall type layout and what have you, better parking, so on and so forth. All of which has just made the traffic worse, strangely enough. But so, you know, no doubt he's got perfect qualities to be the next opposition leader who won't get elected. You know, sorry about that, David. I'm just incredibly cynical. All right, I'm just incredibly cynical about Labour, about National, about the ACT Party, about United Future, about every single frickin' party in this parliament, save maybe New Zealand First and the Mana Party. You know, the only reason why New Zealand First and the Mana Party get my tick is because they actually do what they say they're going to do, and they actually get kicked out of parliament. Here's how you tell whether or not your MP gives a frack about what they're talking about. If they're willing to be kicked out of debates over it or walk out for something that they believe in, all right? Both Mana and New Zealand First have done that. No other party I have seen does that. They're too freaking cowardly. They love their freaking government salaries too blimmin' much. They love lying to people too much. They love the limelight too much to just leave it for the sake of having something called principles. You know why the government had to close its state schools? Because it didn't have any principles. That's right. David Cunliffe erupted onto our television screens on Monday night as though he'd just become Prime Minister. Not just decided to have another crack at the Labour Party leadership. Quote, "If he were a racehorse, you'd swab him," joked an old party veteran. Not for him, the simple press release or note to a reporter of his two rivals, wreathed in Polynesian lays and backed by caucus allies and adoring electorate supporters, he called the world to his electorate headquarters to declare himself back from the wilderness to which he'd been dispatched for checking the now fallen David Shearer. In fact, just after my show yesterday, it might have been the day before, my mate Jono called me and says, "Hey, bro, there's a big media circus down in New Lynn. You know, maybe you should get down there." And I couldn't be bothered. I guess this was what was going on. And I told him it would be in the media if there was such a fanfare about it. He claimed he to be a chastened, wiser, and more humble man for his time in purgatory, cue wild cheering. Over the top it was, but it also brought to mind the expression former leader Helen Clark had used behind the scenes during Labor's last leadership contest in December 2011. Job ready to Ms. Clark, Mr. Cunliffe was job ready, and Mr. Shearer wasn't. Why, that's... Maybe it was Mr. Shearer hadn't spent enough time in the UN for Helen Clark's lighting, and now... See, you know what Helen Clark's doing right now? She's a former Prime Minister in New Zealand. She was like Prime Minister for like 9 years. And back in during the 80s, she was like one of the leaders of the party. And basically, she was... she had virtual control over all the party. Everybody knew who was holding all the cards for the Labour Party for the last 20 or 30 years was. It was Helen Clark. She had like this big solid alliance. They were passing all this draconian legislation. While she wasn't even the head of the party back in the 80s and stuff like that. You know, this is a bad woman. This is a really scary woman. You ever seen her in person, bro? Oof. Mate, she just irradiates this satanic energy. It's actually quite horrific and terrifying to behold, you know, the bulging eyes and sharp teeth, you know. Over the top it was. Oh, yes. Now, it was advice the Labour caucus chose not to take. Mr. Cunliffe had rubbed too many of them up the wrong way over the years. Instead, they took a punt on the new mystery man, David Shearer, who promoted, what was it, mercenaries to be used in African conflicts instead of actually sending troops in when it's talking about when he should be, in fact, trying to stop the major corporations from stealing all the money and bribing all the frickin' dictators in these African countries so that the countries can actually have some form of prosperity and freedom. Frax. Mr. Shearer had entered Parliament just over 2 years before, following a by-election to replace the retiring Ms. Clark in Mount Albert. He came from a stellar 20-year career leading humanitarian activities for the United Nations in world trouble spots, including North Africa and the Middle East. You know, this is nice, isn't it? He's leading humanitarian activities like promoting mercenaries, like Blackwater. That's a humanitarian activity now, by the way. His backers said he had the X factor to challenge National seemingly untouchable leader John Key. He's still untouchable. He practically won the X factor. He's that untouchable. It was never made clear what this miraculous X factor was. I quipped at the time that seeing a savior from the East was highly topical, it being the eve of Christmas. But was it the right way to select someone to lead Labour back into office? It proved not. Whatever his talents, they didn't include any magical abilities to lure voters back to the Labour fold. Now, little more than a year out from the next general election, the Pundit blog's poll of polls as of August 5th has Labour on 31.7%, nearly 16% behind National. And, you know, there's plenty of other parties in there, you know, like Greens are going to get like frickin' 10% or whatever. Party optimists argue that that's an improvement on the awful 27% of Labour's 2011 general election party vote. But Mr. Shearer was not fooled. Years of experience in the world's trouble spots had taught him when to get out, and so he did. I wonder why he got out of his other job and then went into politics only to get out again. Maybe 20 years is enough to realise that you're fighting an uphill battle against huge quantities of scumbaggery. With a general election looming, Labour is now in catch-up mode to bed in a new leader. Once again, it's a contest between job-ready Mr. Cunliffe, first elected to Parliament in 99 and with senior ministerial experience, and another trainee, this time Wellington Central MP Grant Robertson, elected to Parliament in 2008, or just a few months before Mr. Shearer. Also in the race is Shane Jones, who was already admitted he's a back-of-the-field wildcard. Obviously, Mr. Robertson is a political high-flyer, selected despite being another newbie by his colleagues as Mr. Shearer's deputy. But does Labour have the time before the poll to introduce the rest of New Zealand to a leader largely unknown outside the Wellington Beltway? No, they don't. Despite Mr. Cunliffe's past, quote, crimes of arrogance and not suffering his fools gladly, he says his time in the wilderness was transmogrified him into a more humble being. He is an instantly identifiable character on the political stage. He has a respected ministerial record and needs no introductions. For Labour, I would have thought that this is vital. It doesn't have time to waste blooding in another new face. 5 years into the Key government, Labour continues to find it difficult to take advantage of the natural dissatisfaction of incumbent government attracts. Labour couldn't even reap the benefits of the widespread protests against the GCSB Act. Green co-leader Russell Norman became the media opposition spokesman as though by default. Of course, Labour needs more than a change of political leadership to reverse its fortunes. It also needs a campaign plan that both emphasises the need for party supporters not to split their vote and targets the 800,000 or so registered voters who in 2011 did not even vote because, guess what, every single poll said there's no point in voting because National's going to win. And it's the lowest voter turnout since 1886, when even women weren't allowed to vote. In 2011, Labour ran a one-tick campaign emphasising electoral candidates at the expense of the leader. Then Phil Goff and party, the other major parties, all promoted the leader and their party brand. The outcome was inevitable. Labour's share of the party vote, which decides the proportion of seats in Parliament, dropped to 27%, although Labour's candidates collected 35% of the candidate vote. In other words, nearly a quarter of those voting for a Labour candidate cancelled out their vote by giving their party vote to the Greens or New Zealand First or whoever. The first step in reversing this drift away from the party brand is to select a leader who voters instantly link with the brand. Of the two front runners, there's one obvious choice. And that would, of course, be David Cumberland.
Hmm.
All right, great. Now we've got an old face who's going to be the new face of a party that's old and dead, and will betray the country just like every other single one of them. Good on you, New Zealand. We'll see you again sometime at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.